thing is the third and the tenth in terms of our program. We, based on Parliament's program now, that on the third, compared to other days, EPCs or budget votes are being at 10. So if we are to have a meeting, it's literally going to be an hour, it's just a waste. So we pulled that out. On the 10th is actually the budget vote debate for the department. It will be on the 10th of May. That's why that day as well has fallen off. So, Kerry, I know you've been hearing some of these items over and over. It's a bit difficult, and I, as I said, our program relies on Parliament program. So depending what Parliament program is, then we follow that, follow suit. So that's the difficulty that we have in light of our program. And then we close the amendment. We have inserted on the 19th of May, we inserted the Irish Corporate Plan. Oh, sorry, 19 April. We've inserted BDI, and then we are anticipating that we'll adopt our committee report on the 26th. Meaning, we'll finish on the 19th, the team will put together the report, hopefully before end of business Thursday, the 21st, members will have that copy of the report distributed to them, so that they can comment, look at it as a true reflection of our work, so that by the time we come to the committee, our normal process with no members will be doing the report to the committee. So that by the time we come to the committee, members have had time, have looked at it, have even sent some of the comments back to us to comment. So just before we start with the speech, I just thought, let me bring this, if members are happy with it, with the changes, if there's any objection to the changes, we find. Thanks, members, so that we can proceed. Now we come to today. Okay, the other thing I need to highlight, members, is noting that since the departure of Mr. Nene, we don't have a researcher appointed in the committee. And the colleagues that are in the research unit, not most of them are exposed to the sector. So in this process, we likely not to have the right quality of evidence from the research unit. So I thought I've been trying to push backwards, send backwards with comments, but I just realized it's just the issue that the colleagues who are writing the research analysis are not exposed to the sector. And therefore, the information that is coming through is quite not to the level that we are used to, and not to the level that I would, as a chair, expect. But we try to keep on trying to speak to them and get some level of improvement. But I think the solution will definitely come when we have an appointed research in the committee, some as well, that by the time we come back, we'll have a researcher in the committee, more familiar with the sector and all that. And we have noted a circulated email of Ms. Fali is not well. She's been put off. In terms of coordination and communication for the community, we'll communicate with Nikitisha. I know every time we have a separate session to assist us with the community meeting, because based on the secretary, we might have different people because they have their own responsibilities with other ones. Today we have Ms. Kundaval to assist us for. So hopefully, if she is available for other committee meetings, she will be assisting us. But for today, fortunately, she will be assisting us at the committee, so she will be assisting us. With those few words, let me just welcome the team from CETA delegation, led by Ms. Alonga, just the action chair, I'm right. And then I think there will be introductions. I know from the department as well. We've got representatives who do introductions as well for the department of education. I think members should note that as we do the presentation, just I reflect this informally with the department. But strategic plans are normally tabled 1 to 5 years as a plan, and I've noticed from TTPS, the department together with the NGT this year, they came with a revised that strategic plan. And I'm hoping we don't have the same revisions next year, because there must be some level of stability and that we proceed to. is because we also have, when we do things, because you know, when we do the things, we're not expecting for us to do plans, we only expect to allocate performance plans. Now the time we allocated as well is based on this, but when once you have more, then it takes more of the time. But I noticed that some of the changes are not really like substantive documents. Yeah. And I think one of the things is just to take us through the changes, not the entire strategic plan itself, but where the amendments have been, and then take us through the annual performance plan. That would assist us so that we can be able to check where the changes have been. So, welcome to you. I think this is the first question, your plan now. I remember the last time we interacted, you were sent backwards and all those things. So, I look forward to your presentation today. Thank you very much. Over to you, Chair. Mr. Mbeki.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honorable Members of Committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity. As you said, my name is Zubiel Amsterdam, Chair. I'm leading the delegation of the Chair. To my members of the Chair of my committees and other committees. And Dr. Masadu and the Audit Executive Officer will get directed to the presentation. With your permission, thank you.
I'm Graham Victor. I'm a non-executive director and acting chair of the audit committee.
My name is Jeff Malele. I chair the IGTRBI committee of the board.
Sorry, I'm Siyajimo Chala. I'm the chair of the HR committee.
I'm Secretary
of the Town, I'm the Deputy Director of Corporations.
Tanya Abraham, Parliamentary Liaison.
My name is Company
Secretary. I'm Rosanna Rakina, the Chief
Financial Officer. I'm too happy to see you.
Madam Chair, just to indicate that our CFO joined us last November.
Morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Ole Tashemi. I'm with the Department of Telecommunications and Post Affairs. I am the Deputy DG responsible for SOC oversight.
Good morning, sir, and members of the committee. My name is Renan Lucheta. I'm from the Department of Telecommunications for South Asia. I'm the chief director responsible for PDI and CDA.
Good morning, Chair members.
While Paul Kurumoka, your list that you sent us is not a teacher of the institution. Remember, the last time we asked that members would like to have a list of institutions before the meeting. So while the introduction was up, I'm just reminding that I'm looking at the list I have in front of me here. So that members don't ask me what the list I sent to them is going to be. You can introduce yourself.
Let me apologize to the members. I am Glenn Jambu from the Office of the Minister.
Over to you.
Thank you very much, sir, chairperson and members. I do hope that you, I think, the director of the chairperson, let's also have the copy of the strategic plan, where I would like to highlight some of the changes of and emphasis in that area. Then we'll go to the APP. I'll also mention that the presentation starts on the 7th of April 2015, called Nostalgia on the Other Side. Apologies for that. So, On the council has all the changes on the strategic plan. So the first one, or maybe more emphasis, even more meaning from our side, comes from page 16, which is around the SOC rationalization. I must mention that in a response to our APP, the minister did mention that he needs a lot more, or he needs our input into how we intend to participate in the rationalized SOC. So from a timing point of view, we have discussed with the DGPS. The agreement is that the board will provide a position or suggestion by the end of the second quarter, that's around September or so, and that will then be an input into the DGPS program, which will be completed by the end of the financial year. What we are going to be considering there, perhaps the main issue is what is driving us is number one, removal of duplications within the SOC ICT ecosystem, while ensuring that the services that CETA provides are streamlined. The minister, in various correspondence to the board, has requested that we focus on a couple of things. One is e-government. The second one is ICT security. And then the third one is cleaning up procurement so that we are able to pay for money in the true sense. So where the that section of that table on page 16 kind of shows what we'll be looking at, particularly from a point of view of reduction of duplication. It is comprehensive work. We need to look at the entire reference model of ICT, what services have been consumed in government, what services have been provided by SOCs, and then take it from there. The last part going forward there is quite important. It is almost a statement of our principle, that as we review our operating model, we're working on the assumption that we have to look at not only efficiencies from the point of view of procurement, but also operating efficiencies. We need to be able to deliver services to government in a most operationally efficient, in the most in a method that reduces the more risk in terms of execution, and then in the most cost-effective way. That requires that translates into the fact that not all services will be delivered by ourselves. A lot of them will be delivered through the industry, the private sector. However, we know that there are still services that have to be and will continue to be provided by government, particularly services that deal with basic public services, and also that will be the maintenance and storage of government capabilities. The second part is page 23. There, it links into changes that we have made in our e-government program. This comes out of a fairly old document, Government ICT Strategic Priorities. We have looked at all of those things. We've been trying to, perhaps sometimes trying to do all of them at the same time. But we've now honed up on the second point there, which is integration. Improve data integration and standardization across government. That is the point of, that creates a point of departure in our new approach to e-government, but I'll talk about it. Then the other part is on page 39. When we came here, and if one, if we were to look at our programs on procurement, you probably would have seen that we didn't have a formal program on economic transformation, using procurement as a lever for economic transformation, particularly the involvement of our SMEs. In fact, we didn't have an enterprise development function or a program in our procurement function. So we've added that and reviewed some of the different activities related to economic transformation or any involvement of other stakeholders. And then on page 44, we summarize our new approach to e-government. Previously, we designed a fairly, let me not say fairly, a very complex e-government infrastructure that was trying to do automate services across governments in a language is called integration or horizontal integration. Looking at integrating or automating the development, looking at integrating that across departments.
very, very complex. And even if you looked at the, on the technical point of view, looked at that architecture, it looked fairly similar to the old ISMS architecture. But it was bigger than the ISMS in terms of complexity. So we're having recognized that risk. We then put that architecture aside and then said, what can we do in a very short term to bring value to government immediately? So, and that's why we then looked at the current ICT priorities with the data, and then shared that given that we are hosting so many of the government data systems, there is very in fact to be gained on the availability of the release of public data. And so we changed our e-government program to it. There's a lot more, it's much cheaper, it delivers very, very immediately, and the execution is very, very limited. And we have enough human capacity to be able to deliver those services in a very short time. Then we go on to starting from page 49. Previously we didn't have much, I think we have summarized quite a lot our approach to ICT security. And so we have specifically put a lot more information about our program than our approaches. Then moving on, we go to page 54, where in 2014-2019, the board and management looked at a deep review of our operating environment to inform the 2014-2019. And out of that, it became clear that the organization was fairly good at operating things. So the normal mantra is that every month after something to get paid. So that's how it works. Every month the members of the firms get paid. So the specific human HR system works. It has been working for a while. But the challenge, our mandate is not to just keep things the same way. Our mandate is to improve safe delivery to the public. That means life has to be better tomorrow than yesterday. That means that we should be solution-oriented. Every time we look around, that we should see problems, and we should always be coming up with solutions to improve that. So, at the end of that process, the organization reviewed its archetype, what kind of organization should be, verifying to be an operational archetype, but in line with our mandate, we should be a solution-oriented archetype. So, we've included a summary of the key practices that are required for us to be such an organization, including the so-called campus customer focus, and we put a lot more meaning to it, understanding what is happening in the environment, whether people are trying to building capabilities that are being built by the external market, things that we can incorporate, and how we can build partnerships, and also make sure that we put financial management throughout our activities. So that we've given a bit of a summary of the key elements of the kind of organization that you want to be. Then, so question, on page 59, we also made some changes to the operating model of the organization. The old operating model almost suggested that solutions are created out of technology and not necessarily out of solutions to our thinking about problems in public sectors, thinking about solutions to public sectors. And only then you create technology solutions to that. So we have pre-organized our operating model to create a functions regulatory system that look at overhead. That will eventually specialize in understanding the problems that, for example, you know, other government has in the area of security in general, in the area of separating the area of education, and then separating the area of health. That allows us to also be able to bring in specific subject matter expertise in those areas. And that is separated from technology, so technology that becomes the way of implementing this. So the organizational model also takes that into account. But also, we have also put a lot more emphasis now on product lifecycle management. One looks at, we have about three areas of activity that account for 80% of our operations. That is desktop management, talking to the effectiveness of administration of government offices. The second one is the networks, talking about connectivity to government offices. And then the third one is hosting, is where our services are. Like one look at the evolution of those services, somewhere they got stuck because we didn't have formal lifecycle management of production services. Now we're putting it in our management of the desktop, the laptops, and so on and so forth in the office, in government offices. We need to take a bit of a leap, or 5-year leap, because we haven't had a proper focus on that data. So we incorporated that in our lifecycle, in our operating model. Then, lastly, on page 2, previously we did have a number of initiatives that provided a vehicle for implementing our strategy. So we've made a couple of changes to those, again based on feedback from our last engagement here in Parliament, and also various engagements with government departments. In the wheel there, the first quadrant, procurement, number one used to be the procurement hub. We have since removed that and incorporated some of the ideas that we have around the procurement hub in our operating model with the Office of the Procurement Office. We'll talk about that later. Then we have also added another one under resources enablers, which is financial sustainability. And I think later on in the AP, before we discuss the APP, it will be clear that the organization requires a lot more attention to its finance, the incorporation of financial management and everything. In any case, for us to be able to deliver on certain other mandates, for example, cost-effective implementation of IT services to success services, we need to provide solutions that are competitive to what the market provides, and we need to make a financial business case to government on why the CPAs should continue to be used. So that is actually not just about having these opportunities at the heart of our original market. So we incorporated that. The rest of them are still the same. That's a summary. The finances over the 5-year period keep changing, but we'll talk about it in the context of the ADP. But that's, those are just a summary of the reasons why we felt it was important to change the strategic government. And also, as we do so, I think we'll just think about how at any point in time when one does the ADP and looks at the surface planning to see some alignment. I recall last year when we were here, we did lose that alignment between the document that said strategic plan and the document that said ADP. So at least this one, we are certain that there's alignment between the two. So then moving on the APP, again, I do hope that the members have the document I'll be referring to it as we move on. Our presentation on page 2 essentially covers the summary of the strategic program, and then we go into the APP table and then the finances. We have reviewed and just in general, if I may, the overall strategic framework is still the same. Nothing has changed in terms of where we are going, even though we did do a lot of work in terms of strengthening our internal capabilities related and other processes related to the management of our APP. We were doing this thing looking at the overriding policy principles containing the NDP and SONA and the budget vote. In fact, there are some changes that we made as a result of the budget vote itself. Linking up with the National Treasury. But then it's approved by the board and has been submitted and approved by the executive authority with particular feedback on us to clarify a lot more how we're going to participate and make conditions on the social transition. We do have a number of targets. I think the total number of targets we say 25. That sounds a lot more than really what they should be, given where the organization is. But we tried to explain why it was a very difficult juggling exercise. We do have issues around procurement, for example, around infrastructure, around customer service, that's something that was not there, and also the organization service. We do believe that we have kind of work that we've done on the internal, certainly our internal operating processes, we'll still be able to do well on the 25 targets.
Yeah.
And then we present the main documents, the targets in terms of quarterly targets required. The the main focus that I mentioned now, gender, is that the minister has asked us to focus on those three activities. One is e-government, and the second one is data security of the IT systems and data. And then the third one is filling up procurement from a governance and administration point of view, and also making procurement a true value add to government. So we, as I mentioned earlier, we have reviewed our entire approach to e-government, making it simpler, getting results fairly quickly. In that respect, there is we have aligned with so we're taking an approach to go to start with what is called business intelligence, e-government services. And we have aligned with a couple of programs that are there with the government. There's one sitting at the DGPSA from the presidency that is called the Open Government Partnership. Within the Open Government Partnership, there's another program about open government data. Essentially, that is a program that tries as a new global program that tries to exploit public data that is hosted by government for social and economic activity. Our premise is that the government that holds more data than almost every entity, every business, it holds more data than banks around the world. The government interacts or does more transactions with members of the public, with objects that it manages and almost than anything. Even to the extent, on a daily basis, when we consume electricity, when we consume utilities, we are interacting with government, we are making transactions, even if the data does not really, is not really full time. So that is the new thing. We're also strengthening our approach to ICT security, particularly looking at the skills that are required to be able to properly implement that. We are the first order of business person is looking at the very basic thing that is probably a bit of a problem, this deficit of government assets. So we are at the tail end now of a proposal that is going to suggest that we take all of these government assets, put them in a safe, secure area where we put them. We know that when we do so, and consolidate all of those sorts of things, we are acting a lot more attention to them, so we are upfront, put a lot more security on them. And it's the same, so save from government buildings and government internal systems, and save from our systems. So that one of the tactical examples of trying to of our new approach to ICT security. And then our procurement work, we have reviewed our strategy and our policies already twice over the last 2 years. The programs are there. What we now need to be doing is a lot more focusing on implementation. The good thing is, since the last time we're here, we have opened up and established a very good, I was very happy with that relationship with the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer at National Treasury. They're very, very exciting project that has been agreed to together with the DG and National Treasury to support that work. And then lastly, that's the first point there. And then we always look at our turnaround times. The CETA regulations require that whenever, especially for working in a procurement agent, whenever a department registers a procurement request of us within 10 days, we should provide them with a positive plan on how we're going to satisfy them. And that positive plan is a CETA positive plan. It's not a positive plan within the procurement function of CETA. So we've changed now our target for procurement turnaround times. It's based essentially on the certification and incorporates all the internal steps until we give the department final result. And believe me, this is a very big source of frustration from our departments, our procurement turnaround times. And then lastly, we continue looking at our foreign corruption or practice around procurement. Starting with simple things, you know, behind the idea of a procurement hub was it an attempt to solve some basic practices, including practices around the tender office. There's a very good example, I think, in Gauteng, where there's a massive tender where the whole evaluation is being done in the public domain, where you can always go there and look at the evaluators and see what they're doing, and I think they have a record of their conversation. That's the kind of transparency, I think, at the tail end, that that is the kind of transparency that the procurement hub was assigned to. Even though the procurement hub is not going to be there in the sense, all of those activities still need to incorporate.
in order to try and reduce to zero foreign corruption in the procurement. We, in our NP, we are still looking at our infrastructure. We need an infrastructure from starting from the outside, the civil, the electrical, and the mechanical. The mechanical including the air conditioning systems. The electrical is the normal grid power, and then the generators and the UPSs. In 2014, towards the end of 2014, our electrical system was there at the main intercenters, and it was very, 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 very unreliable, and they were affecting public service in a real sense, particularly in Capital of Home Affairs. We haven't seen such such instability in the last year around those systems. So our program is now based on two things. One, continuous stabilization. We are now going to focus even more on the mechanical system that's still under quite a big one still. And the second thing is that one is the stabilization of the main business and switching centers. The second is design for full modernization of those data centers. And then the third one is around creating disaster recovery facilities once and for all government IT systems. So our approach is that it doesn't really matter. It's not disaster recovery for super hosted services. Even municipalities there, they have a server sitting in a back office. Our view is that we should create facilities around our country, a point of presence potentially in each and every province that allows each and every government IT system to be picked up in one way or another, or to enable those other services to have disaster recovery capabilities. The second thing that we are doing is looking inside the data centers, the servers. We have completed now over the last year, we completed a full review of all the systems that are hosted inside the data centers and security centers. It is a very somber picture when one sees that report, you know that there's a lot of work immediately that has been done. A number of systems that are quite old, and where the support is done by ourselves and sometimes without the OEMs. That's a very, very big focus there. In the next year, we are redesigning, instead of rushing to implementation, we are stabilizing what we have, but then redesigning the entire infrastructure. And the opportunity there is very, very big. It allows for us to consolidate instead of having many individual servers serving individual departments. We can now go the full route, the so-called cloud infrastructure or X infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, as the industry. Then the third point there is looking in a more comprehensive way at our customer service management. We did make a survey on our customer service survey in 2015. The results were very, very low, below 40% satisfaction. But on the other hand, we have been reporting on SLA performance, service level agreement performance, about 95%. So clearly there's a distance between what we see as the operation of the performance of our operating environment versus how customers perceive the effectiveness of our services. So we have looked at our SLAs and have found what was wrong in the design of our SLAs and we fixed that. But we also said that we should also have we should still continue to enable customers to give us feedback directly in our own ways, irrespective of how the infrastructure works. And that will go a long way in helping us to continuously improve ourselves. There are a couple of other things that we have added there in respect of customer services. I must point out there, Chairperson, that we reviewed in 2014 when we reviewed the government ICT market. We saw that the government spending about at that time $28 billion on general ICT. $17 billion of that was on things that CETA should be doing. But the scope of operational CETA was a fraction of that, about $4 billion of that $17 billion. There are issues there. If there has fragmentation in the spend, clearly we cannot get it from this scale. Each department is going to approach a Microsoft on their own, is going to approach an IBM, is going to approach Cisco, is going to approach the suppliers of laptops on their own. chances are that they're going to pay a premium. We're seeing certain cases where those cases were fixed, where it's quite clear that we're paying about 30% premium on market prices on certain goods. And that is as we can see. Now, if there's fragmentation, that's probably 30 to 40, 50% premium for the rest of ICT's spend that is being outside of CEDA. Really for us to be able to go and convince government departments that they should come to us and that must buy in bulk with scale, we should convince them that, number one, there's no corruption, and number two, we have the skills to negotiate properly commission with these suppliers there. An example of that is the Office of the Chief Human Officer in National Treasury. We know we have the data, government spends about $3.2 billion on general communications, fixed mobile communications. There's a new practice note now that has just come out that said that if you were running a tender for mobile services stock from April now, that procurement is now going to be consolidated to government. And that includes fixed communications as well. And know that we are providing these communications to government. So that's one example of the work we're doing with the program, that office. An example of practical tests on consolidation. Then I must say that there's in your document there's something called ultimate revenue growth. It follows that you have remote revenue growth. What you're talking about is growth. And this growth is in respect of doing more of what we should be doing, not doing 4 billion worth of work, but doing 12, 13, 4 billion rand worth of work to get the same things. But also, our very proposition is that if we are spending 17 billion now, we should be spending much less than that, perhaps maybe a billion or two less, but get the same outcomes. We have data, for example, that shows that we are spending more of our government budgets on IT. More percentage, our percentage of government budget goes to IT has traditionally been higher than when compared to other countries. In 2010, it was 2.4% of government budget went to IT, and the average, the maximum was 2% and sometimes 1%, average of 1.5%. So that's a very proposition. And that could talk to your fourth point there of trying to do more for government while providing value in terms of getting more out of the industry and more government for less money. Then we're looking at our internal operations. We have reviewed the when one looks at the kind of organization that CEDA should be as a solutions provider. Our view, for example, is that the CEDA Act say that the first object of CEDA is to improve service delivery to the public through provision of well-maintained and secure ICT systems. Our view is that, in fact, the first part of that applies to every public servant. There is no public servant who can come and say my mandate is not to improve service delivery to the public. That applies to everybody. We just do the same thing through the provision of ICT systems. And therefore, we should have the same kind of approach to thinking about socio-economic problems. Every time we read news that there's unemployment or youth unemployment sitting at 40% or 5% is increasing towards 50%, we should be thinking about how ICT can be used to solve that problem. Every time we read news about the state of public health care, we should be thinking about how ICT should be solved. That requires a different kind of internal capability, a solution-oriented capability that will, in addition to just an IT capability. So, and one has to accept the reality that if the old focus, the traditional sector focus were on building IT systems and not necessarily providing other service solutions, then we probably would have had or hired IT people, not public servants, who use IT to solve public service problems. So it means that it may take a little bit of time to be able to get the CEDA that was envisaged in the Act in 1998. However, we recognize that and we are doing roadshows now with international members, and they are accepting that. In fact, that world where we are public servants is much bigger and much more exciting than the world where we are just key people. So the focus on internal capabilities, culture, and so on and so forth, is based on that focus. Our second priority is then, I sense that it's still the same. I think you would have mentioned this person that it's really about what we are focusing on as opposed to what we are trying to deliver. We're still trying to deliver very early procurement, but still trying to deliver high quality world class consolidated in our core IT systems, still trying to enable automation or e-government in general, protecting government systems, government data, building an effective and healthy organization, and having efficient internal business processes and systems. As I mentioned on page 7 that our strategic initiatives are still fairly the same, with the exception that we have removed the procurement hub, but we've also, on the other hand, added the financial sustainability. And to the extent that we are going to now support, we know, as we are reviewing this, and we'll be dealing with this when we come with the annual report. Some of the activities that kind of lagged, or the APP was not as outcome or output based as it should be. So there is, rather than such as initiatives appear, the results may not be showing as much as they should be showing. So another example of that relevant to the APP. We are going to support this implementation fast tracking through agency number 22 there, which is a transformation program management office, so that we don't lose focus and don't have programs that what people are doing there, have their own interpretation of what should be done there. On page 8, we summarize the programs there. There are 6 programs. Service delivery, that looks at the ultimate, what we ultimately deliver to government. And then program 2 looks at the tools, the infrastructure that we use to deliver to government. Program 3 is around procurement. 4, financial sustainability. 5, organization. And then 6, governance and administration. And I'm going to a little bit more detail on page 9. If you have a child, just want to use some of the examples, concretize some of the things that we're talking about here. On service delivery, perhaps I can refer members just to highlight a small change that we have made. Refer members to the main document that's on page 60 of the APC. If you look there, the first item around e-government, you'll see that in 2014-2015, we have a performance increase of that. That's just 97%. And the actual measurement was 97%, and the increase was percent implementation of e-government. Now, I must say this time around, you're subjected as APP to the AG to test for smartness. Previously, there was such. So this target there was essentially saying that you'll do percentage implementation of a plan. And that plan would not have been visible to yourselves. And that plan may or may not even have been visible to, or the plan itself was not based on any kind of output. So if you say, that we've achieved 7%, and you were to ask us, so how did this thing change lives? How did it improve service delivery to the public? Then we'll struggle with that. Because essentially we may even, our answer will show you a project plan and say we have achieved milestone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And those milestones intense are the required internally focused. So we'll change that now. That change happened last year, in 2016, where we say that we are doing 15 vertical integrated services. At least we'll be continuing. Now, as I mentioned earlier, around the fact that we've changed our approach to what is it, we've taken a view that data is very, very useful, and that there is a lot of benefit that can be derived from making that consolidating and intermittent data that is taken in government and making available to initially the government for decision making, policy making, and eventually to the public sector. So, whatever, the situation that we've done, looked at the education system. the education system pick learners from a very, very early age when they get into public schooling. They track them through, for example, ANA assessments. Whether it's 1 year or 3 years, it doesn't matter. But those, the registration for ANA's we keep, the individual results for ANA's we keep. And then they check as people exit the system, the various reasons that people are exiting the system. And sometimes people exit the system full time. We know, for example, they exit the cash system full time. Or sometimes they exit the system to look at other options. For example, they will go into the NCD program. Then at the end, some people will exit the system through the normal the National School Certificate. At the end, you have a cohort that starts in year 1. And in year 12, you have a statistic that says that only 60% of those people that had 12 years in sit for their major results. But the question is, where did the rest go? We have another statistic that says that about 45% of the youth in the school 15 and 24 are not in school, are not employed. And if not, they are not studying, they are not employed. And there's very few that could be below grade 10. So what has happened to us? Could it be that if one had an understanding and looked at that data throughout the life of learners, then could identify where problems are happening and you could fix certain things upfront through policy interventions. But the question now, the issue now is that we don't have, from an individual point of view, we don't have a single view of a learner. We don't have a view of a cohort as it goes through the education system, the basic education system. We don't have abstraction of that data at the statistical level and for different people. We don't have that information coming back to the parents so that parents can even look at in a different way. Once I can see results, pack them there, see results, if they are results and so on and so forth. But if there was a system that could give me where I can go in and punch my information, my parents, my dependents, and I can get a view at any point in time of my dependents throughout the education system, I may in fact be some decisions about it. If I'm a teacher, for example, if I'm a policymaker looking at teachers looking at the future economic potential, I could look at the teacher training programs and identify, have a similar view of a teacher from a point of view of training programs. And I can make certain suggestions about where the education system of teachers should be, which teachers should go into what direction in terms of giving that their history. That's the power of public data. We have some methodologies that have been developed in other parts of the world that show how one can even quantify the social and economic benefits of public data. If one, for example, creates a certain type of digital marketplace that allows learners to make inputs about their career aspirations and so on. About 3 weeks ago, we learned that the Moses Mabhida Stadium was designed by somebody. That person has passed away. The family has not gotten any benefit out of it. And the former executive mayor says that's one of my biggest regrets. Now imagine that in that digital marketplace, all of that nation talent could be put there. Imagine that the same digital marketplace is accessed by all potential people who are interested in investment. The formal investment companies, angel investors, venture capitalists, and all sorts of other people who look at this talent problem. That means that it could also be accessed by, and people also present their own aspirations of where they want to, where they may or may not want to invest. It could be used by teachers, for example, to look at opportunities of the future, and so on and so forth. And all of those things, the data is there, and everybody can share information. It has been quantified, for example, I won't mention the numbers there because the numbers are so big that I can show that where did they come from. But it has been, we have a document that quantifies the social economic in terms of GDP growth in terms of job creation of an implementation of that e-government program on its own, irrespective of what the rest of the national ecosystem does. To the extent that information is available, if it's not there, then what is the job loss, job opportunity lost? So that is our approach now to the e-government. These services are going to develop this year, look at the reuse of public data within the education system, and then we're going to start extending that into healthcare and other areas. And when we present them to government, we're not going to present them as a technical solution. We're going to present them as solutions to specific policy problems. Then the program, under program one, their service delivery, the only addition that we've made is on the maturity levels. Our ICT will now become very specific that we're looking at endpoint protection and also threat management. And the rest of our business is to deal with this little matter of protecting public government ICT services. Then on page 10, we have now added customer satisfaction levels. We are starting from a very, very low base in terms of overall satisfaction with our customers. Our target is 50%. But Jefferson, we, as much as we still have problems, we have seen recently effects of just doing small things right and small things fast. We know as a collective that we can do them right and fast. We have an example now where just for the end of the financial year in Limpopo, the entire patient information management system was addressed. And that really collapsed there. Not collapsed, but it put a bit of a challenge to the provincial public health system. We had the CFO of the health department calling, asking for us to come to the party. And the entire sister collective, I mean, it was a very amazing thing where I found people going there from SITA Finance, SITA Procurement, going to help RJK there in the board, our process. The board, the Procurement Committee came to the party, special session, and it dealt with this matter. A few hours after board session, we have our legal is ready, the documents are there. The company secretary is ready with the tax resolution. They signed the legal documents. The city says, I called Mr. Mdawin in Limpopo CFO, and on the phone he says, now this is the city that I want. I can now trust you with all my IT systems. In fact, I'm going to give you all my IT systems. Mr. Mdawin may or may not give us all our IT systems. I think the most important thing for me was him saying that he's now willing to give us access to our IT systems. We have seen some of those examples, much as we continue having problems. We are quite very, very open to receiving the feedback, as painful as it may be, because that's the only way that we can measure our progress in satisfying our customers. The next one there on our service level agreement metrics, we have been reporting the things that we've been measuring, but we have not been measuring things that are related to the pain points of customers. So our numbers are reporting on the fact that when a call is made to our call center, we do pick it up and record it. And they don't measure clearly about our response times and resolution times. And that's a very big source of frustration, that I've called you, I've told my problem, but have people come back to me with a problem of how they're going to solve this thing and have my problems been solved. So that has been a weak one. So we have now put a lot more weight on those things that are aligned to the customer experience. So our numbers there today should be able to align with the customer satisfaction. So saying also, we are not also measuring every SLA that is we have with our customers. So that's why there we say against measured contract with SLAs. And then the other one is a challenge for us to do more for government. For lack of a better phrase, we said percentage increase in our carbon market share. But what is this doing to say looking at 17 billion and saying that we need to more, that's our mandate. It's not about revenue, it's not about profit. It's actually about saving government money. that we can get access to the surface probably for less than 17 billion if we are making of our consolidation economies of scale appropriate. However, we cannot essentially keep using the law since that actual force government to make it. We cannot be responsible for some of the conflicts that happen there when DGs as accountable officers feel so exasperated that they are going to take a risk of going and doing this. Or when they go through us, then they use us as a procurement agent. And the problem being using us as a procurement agent is that every department then buys their own system individually, but you are almost undoing upfront the opportunities for e-government if that happens. Because now, if every department is doing their own things, later on you are going to spend more money trying to reintegrate all of the systems into e-government. So we have to deliver and show a very proposition. And we have to show departments that the money that is being appropriated to them through Parliament is not going to be used corruptly by us, because ultimately they are the ones that have to account for effective use of that money. So we, and this is something that also has come as feedback from the ministry, that our proposition has to be very, very clear for the ministry itself to assist us with whatever issues that we have come. Then the last thing that is, oftentimes we in different portfolio committees, we government departments will come to accounting there and say, Rosita, we want to go away from it. They put pressures to prime ministers and cause a lot of tension between different layers of within the state. And we have never really publicly challenged ourselves. We say that it is our responsibility to make sure that government departments and people that call our customers don't come asking to be excused from CETA. Right? We always are almost sometimes say reacting to those things, to the calls when people say want to exit CETA. So now we are publicly saying that I'm hoping that 90% probably should be higher over the next year, it will be higher. Publicly saying that we are now taking the responsibility for retaining synergies within CETA, that should stay within CETA. So, and the way we do that, we look at all the complaints that have come through, why people say they want to go through CETA, and challenge each other to make sure that there is no such incentive in a bad way from us. Then page 11, that is now going into infrastructure problem 2. We are looking at our data centers in a lot more detail. And we have three old data centers. What you see there, the previous, we used to say, I mean, just another example, maybe if members can go into the main APP document that is on page 90. You see that in the 2 years there, this metric of the performance indicators and the implementation of the plan, and we said 100% in 2014-15, and then we said 90% of milestone completed in 2015-16. In that, doesn't tell you anything. In fact, if one were to ask the Department of Home Affairs whether we achieved 100% of our program for around data centers, they would say absolutely not. That is why during the year, financial year 2014-15, we wanted to exit CETA because the data center situation was not the same, because the electrical system was so unstable. So once again, you say we are moving away from such metrics. The new metric there talks to the availability of the data centers. And that availability is actually a recurring availability, meaning that we are not saying that roughly 0.25% of time government systems will be off. We're saying that it's those will be times when the systems will not be directly available. So it's either at any point in time from the extra point of view, it's the grid power and generators and UPSs working. Grid power is not working, at least the UPSs and the generators are working to the extent of being able to support the critical systems. Same thing with the mechanical, the air conditioning, the ventilation systems. So now we have another 99.75% availability or redundancy in the electrical and electrical systems on all of our data centers. The second thing there is our storage and server infrastructure, the storage of government data and processing of our transactions on our government systems. We've done a full review, as I mentioned earlier, Chairperson, of the government. We looked at each and every piece of equipment in the data centers. And we know we have a lot of work to do. Some of these things are quite old, 2002, 2003. So, while we are stabilizing the work, we rather say don't rush into trying to implement everything. And we'll spend a full year redesigning the government IT system. Use high, very, very big opportunities for efficiencies, operational efficiencies, cost efficiencies, if one does a consolidation in the right way. So our program there is just about creating the ultimate modernization plan. I mean, if one looks at the extent of this thing, instead of taking what has been done, or not only since the creation of CETA, but since prior to the creation of CETA, because some of those systems are as old as or precede the creation of CETA, and re-architecting them and rebuilding them, that's a lot of work. And a lot of risk involved in that. So we want to benchmark appropriate. And my last one on infrastructure there is around disaster recovery. Because in our view is that there are a lot of systems that are sitting in local government, provincial. The AG is going both to every portfolio committee highlighting findings on ICT risk facing government departments. At the top of that is always about disaster recovery and business continuity. We have taken it as our job there. And the intention is to make sure that each province has an opportunity to create a disaster recovery point of presence. That's an opportunity, and if they like not to do so, there should always be options outside of the province. Each disaster recovery point of presence is not just for provincial system, but it's actually a hub for all the municipal systems that reside in that province. That's why we would like to create such points of presence in each province. It doesn't mean for us to be able to implement this, it does not require us to go and build new infrastructure. We've gone into the market, we want to make the best that the country has. We have gone into the market, we have got a list of everything that Telkom, Nortel, MTN, Vodacom, Cell C, all their data centers, even IT companies, PCS, what they have around the country. And we will be clear about our security requirements, for example, but there is now a program that will allow us to create disaster recovery for all ITs. We will be very modest in our time estimate. We put only two disaster recovery sites. But it is almost an emergency situation if one looks at the state of the infrastructure as the item number two there. Then moving on to page 12, that is now the procurement program, program number three. I suggested earlier that if one looks at our older APP, we had a lot of targets there that looked at the turnaround time within the procurement function only. Then we looked at turnaround time on the contractor side. Then we looked at cancellations and all sorts of other things. We'll now combine those into this one metric. And that is overall turnaround time. The number there, target is still very modest at 65%, but it could be higher. But since we are now looking at end-to-end processes, we need to make sure that we tie up the resources. The statistics that we have from 2013, where we noted that 80% of repairs that go into our procurement function for renewal of licenses came to procurement with a month or less before expiry of such contracts. Now that kills everything. It gives opportunity to negotiate, gives opportunity to consolidate, and most likely creates opportunities for irregular expenditure if you are not able to close such deals within a month or sometimes a week before the thing expires. So we need to fix the back end. We need to fix the demand management systems that are coming from our lines of business. But the target that we have includes processing happen in our lines of business. So long as the customer, internal or external, has registered a procurement request, the box starts ticking from there.
until the customer has a deliverable. So it includes all the contracting and so on and so forth. Then the second one there is a very fairly exciting one. That some time ago, in the 2 or 23 initiatives and procurement procurement project, there's something there called Citazon, launch of Citazon. And Citazon is pronounced that way, not Citazon, it's pronounced like Amazon, and it's doing, it's attempting to do exactly what Amazon does. It's an e-commerce platform for transacting on our procurement. Our approach for this year, so the business secretary has requested us to implement that in earnest for the financial year. And we will have done it by the end of the financial year, roll it to for all CETA procurement, and also roll it out and make it available to the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, National Treasurer, for certain transactional contracts. As I mentioned, in this system here, the opportunity there is essentially to remove almost most of the manual work that happens in procurement. Almost everything is automated, the specifications are automated, the evaluation is automated, the interactions with the private sector organization of tenders is automated, the receiving of tenders is automated, the adjudication is automated, and most importantly, all of these things have an audit trail, electronic audit trail. The value that is time, is value for money, and remove potentially quite significantly opportunities for foreign corruption. The next one there is on savings on acquisition of goods and services. We still have a modest target of 10%, however we have in between that potentially we are paying about 30% premium on market prices. The challenge there is that some of the contracts were assigned, so they're on a 3-year basis, so the claims provider can always say no, I don't want to renegotiate. But some people are sitting down, some people are getting a message that they have to, it's imperative for everybody for them to renegotiate. Some people have said we are able to open our contracts. And the other one is send through SMEs. We are all aware of the PFA and how it guides us on how we should do procurement. We're also aware that we do have targets for involvement of SMEs and so on in our ICT procurement. Our view is that there is a clear business case for doing so. We know and we have seen many cases where certain goods and services are provided by the same companies year in, year out, renewal after renewal. You can almost trace an organization for 20 years on that. And you look at that, you find that there's an OEM somewhere around the world who has a deal with a person here, and it's a sole provider deal. And when you have a situation like that, you're going to lose because you are stuck with that system somewhere embedded in personal, can't really change it anytime soon. You are dependent on one OEM, you are dependent on one service provider. You're going to lose. Our challenge to some of this, our view is that as the introduction of SMEs in our system is essentially the introduction of competition in that environment. It's not just for social results. It has a direct implication on the cost of doing business. Even if we spend money promoting SMEs, building SMEs through our enterprise development program, the medium and long-term business case for us is very, 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 very clear. There's a lot and lots and lots of systems in CETA that, because of that system, the tradition is that they're not subjected to the open market. And so we are pushing that quite a lot. And the combination of that target there, the normal target that we're giving is about 30%, we're still modest. Because number one, we need to do the last part, which is enterprise development properly, and then the second item there, which is the development of the e-commerce platform, in order to build SMB participation in a way that we hope will still comply with the PFA. Then on page 13, problem 4 and problem 5, previously we used to have revenue there. Revenue is not our Our intention is not to grow revenue. Our intention is to do more for government of what we are created to do, but do it in a sustainable way. So now we have put a target that is EBIT, earnings before interest and tax, which allows us to be able to track our ability to generate enough surplus for us to be able to reinvest into the organization and grow the organization without having to go to government and beg for money. This is an organization, as we see the finances, our income statement is fairly weak. Maybe I can even just introduce that. Our income statement is very, very weak. Our issue is really around productivity. Productivity affects our ability to do more of what we're supposed to do so that we get more income. Our productivity affects the cost of doing whatever it is that we're doing right now. Both in the line of business and call phase of service delivery and also in our support structures. Our productivity is affected, or our financial performance is affected. The productivity has a very big impact on the cost of our human resources. There's a lot of opportunities to make better use of our human resources, train better. We spend this financial year, unaudited results year to date February, end of February. We spent $43 million on training. But that training, the question that we have, has resulted in people who are more certified to operate the network. So the network is Cisco. We have more Cisco certified internet engineers that are Cisco. Did we have more people certified on the operation of the natural and other systems that are used for personal and lodges and almost all the education systems? The answer is no. That $43 million has been spent on courses, but has not necessarily created a more technically competent environment on the basis that is tested that can be tested through the certification programs. So that's a new effort now to improve productivity, make use of the same people, but make them deliver more. Reduce the growth of our human resources costs and be able to do more for government. The second thing is that the productivity of our assets. And that starts with the cost of acquisition of those assets and the cost of maintaining and operating those assets. If we just take an offer that's presented to us, we don't negotiate hard. If we accept the 30% premium against our market prices, then the cost of acquisition is going to be high. That means that the service is going to be able to be given to government enterprise that is to the extent that we have to make a return on those costs is going to be presented to government at costs that should not be that is higher than what the market should be producing there. So two things that affect our cost, human resources cost and the cost of the acquisition of assets, both the tangible and intangible assets, the software licenses. The organization is still it is sensitive to cash. So we still keep the liquidity ratio there as a metric. We, much as the way we are scheduled, irrespective of the way we are scheduled in terms of the PFMA, our view is that we should generate a surplus, cash surplus, and we should demonstrate that we are reinvesting that cash surplus in keeping the infrastructure up and expanding it. We should also manage the financial risk of the organization. And a typical organization should have enough cash to be able to support about 3 months of short-term liabilities. Our cash balances right now only support probably about half of that in a month and a half of short-term liabilities, and that's not enough. For us to be able to support 3 months of short-term liabilities, we must be able to keep about 1.5 billion rand of cash. But that is adding to our cash. That means that it still has to be cash generated to be able to build and upgrade the infrastructure. So cash is an issue. We have done some things around cash. You'll see that the accounts receivables have always traditionally been high. Meaning that there's a lot of debt that CETA is carrying. That debt is not just caused by departments. It's not caused by departments being delinquent, paying us. It is that's at the time of contract. If the contract is not clear, there's not clear understanding of what should be delivered, the consult should be delivered. If the execution implementation is slow, if departments are not satisfied with the ultimate output, there's probably going to be a lot of disputes about whether departments are going to pay or not. So, in order to improve our cash position, we have, you notice that we have planned for a steep reduction in the debt in accounts receivable, so that our cash balance will be much in a much better position. Meaning that we can keep our cash balance fairly strong without going up and seeing increasing tariffs or anything like that. It's improving productivity and managing our customers in a better way. The CFO will go into more detail there. The other issue is our gross margin there. Our gross margin, the industry gross margin is fine. The industry EBIT is higher than what we have there, and the industry gross margin is slightly higher than what we have there. In the 20% in the gross margin is still okay. The problem is that that gross margin is not able to support effectively the rest of our administration cost. We suggest that it's not the cost of delivery that is a problem, it's also the cost of support, administration cost, that is also a problem. But independent of the effort, we still have to make sure that the margins in or we are delivering in an efficient and effective way. The APEX, we deliberated quite a bit about whether we should keep doing this. It is a percentage of a budget, but at least the budget is there. But we feel that we have a bit of a crunch and that we are competing quite a number of competing requirements on our cash. We said the little that has been given or allocated for CapEx must be used. If you recall last year, the chairperson there, we only used about 18% of our CapEx. The numbers this year hopefully are going to be much higher as of the audit, but we are pushing them even higher in the next financial year. We continue looking at the overall health and effectiveness of the organization through that HPO system. But the new thing that we've added there under the problem number 5 is the issue of skills, critical skills. The age profile of our staff members is a funny shape. It's quite heavy on the young side, below 40. Then it has a small leg at the end, above 60. That's a very strange thing, because normally you should, you must have a bell curve, but almost a hump of a bell curve. And you should have smoothness at the end and on the older side. Why is there this small hump there? The small hump essentially is caused by a reality of it. It shouldn't be there. It's a management issue. Of the fact that there are certain so-called skills or experience that is almost located in a few people. Certain systems are only known by a few people. And the people are still there, sometimes 65, 66, 70, 71. And we still have. Now, it shouldn't be like that. It's a pure management problem. And when one looks at it, you look at the issues we have in middle management, you look at the complexity of SHETA, which was created out of many organizations. Has there been a real deep attention to the detail of internal transformation and so on and so forth? And the answer is that probably that has not happened. You look at what has been happening around skills development and career pathing, you find the policies are there, but the management practices are not there. This is the reason why in the NGV, for example, that a tragedy at NGV in 2016, January, we still have two people, one of them good person, but one of them is on that hump on the outside. Only two people who know the system, and they are busy with other system in DBE. There's no reason why we should not have done strategic planning. We should not have done skills transfer. What we've demonstrated in the last 2 months is that it can be done. So now I have about 5 developers that are just a hub to add the 2 people who were there over the last 5 years. We've transferred the skills over the last 2 years. That means the system set could not be transferred over the last 5 years. And we have demonstrated that it's a simple management problem. So we're now coming, 3 chapters, in public, saying we're going to push succession plan, and that we're going to identify critical skills, and we're going to have a minimum cover ratio on those critical skills. Our cover ratio is going to be 1 to 2, but internally, we would like to have a cover ratio that is bigger than that, 1 to 3, 1 to 4 on some of those skills. We want to make sure that even as people execute, that they are not exiting, being feeling that they are being talked about, that they feel that they are responsible for holding skills, that they were selfish in their approach to public service. We want people to exit the system feeling that they have left a legacy. And the legacy is not the knowledge that they live in, it is the people, young people, that they have trained, that are going to carry that knowledge for them moving forward. And we have challenged on NCB the people that, the old people that are there. And they have responded. We know that people, when they are challenged on the right things, they respond in the right way. The challenge for them, the environment, is that this thing has to be done across all of CETA. The number is modest at 20%. And that is just based on accepting the reality that change of this type that appeals to very, very deep emotions and deep fears around people takes time. But it's a public challenge that we are putting there. That never again should we have public services, critical public services that affect society in such deep ways. Should there such some public services be at risk because of certain things that we should be doing as managers. Then the last program there on page 14 is around governance and administration. We would have liked to come here and say that we are targeting clean audit, and we will accept criticism that says that it is non-negotiable to do so. But we're also coming here with the reality that there are a lot of things that we still have to look at. On a quarterly basis, we'll be looking at cleaning up our management as opposed from the AG. We have done much better in this year than in the previous year in terms of dealing with the AG reports. But the system itself needs time to take off. So our commitment at least that we are going to be better than last year in terms of we continue getting at least clean finances and get our internal objectives right. And then in the next year we'll come and say, okay, fine, compliance with legislation and so forth. We want to be clean there. Then on risk, we are saying we'll continue maintaining our level 4 risk maturity level, but we want to make it more practical. Level 4, you can have level 4 with better policies and better strategies and so on and so forth. But if government websites still keep being defaced, that means that there's certain element of risk management that has not been institutionalized properly. So what we'll be coming with is not only an attaining level 4, but also demonstrating that an operational level, the risks have been sufficiently mitigated. Having said, still said that we may not have a clean audit within the next year, what we will still publicly, we are going to publicly challenge ourselves on, is that we do not want any findings on respect to foreign corruption on our procurement processes, and we will accept and publicize the AG findings on that, and our intention is our internal processes to try and maintain those at CEO. So, President, that is the summary of the program. The CFO will go through the finances with your permission, Chairperson.
Congratulations on your appointment and welcome to CETA. Okay. Thank you.
I think the CEO has already mentioned the challenge that we are having in terms of our finances, the fact that they are not looking good, but we will be improving finances definitely. And I think we have started not only improving finances for SICA, but for the whole of government in terms of making sure that the services that we deliver them at cost-effective manner. So in that regard, we started negotiating some of the big contracts, and we are seeing significant savings that we can even pass to the customers. That said, we are not here, obviously, to increase our revenue significantly, as the law has said. But I just need to mention the fact that for the past 7 years, the tariffs, especially for labor and hosting services, have not been approved or revised. Fault being from both sides, from our side, from the people that need to assist us to make sure that that does happen in terms of the act. So this year we've taken a risk. We said we are going to, when we do our budgeting, we are going to apply an inflation-related percentage to come up with a budget for revenue, bearing in mind that the costs are also increased by inflation. We have gone through we've gone through some of the standing committee of the GPOC, and they are in support of the proposal that we are making. For the final, it's a government information. So we have done those presentations, and we are also then going to be working with the department that those increases be effective from this financial year. We cannot wait another year, because then this business is not going to be sustainable going forward. Okay, if I concentrate then on 2016-17, we are budgeting a revenue of around 6.3 billion, and that is an 18.7% growth if we compare to the forecast amount, which is more or less what was the APV budget. Cost of sales included in that revenue is the procurement agency revenue, where the revenue comes through and the cost also goes out. And then we charge the different entities a margin, which is, I think, around 7%, but it depends on the negotiations. Then what we're also saying is that if we look at our cost of sales, as compared to your revenue, that's just quite high. And it's something that we're looking at. The biggest amount there is 33% or so, which relates to your labor, but direct labor. So the labor that you're using in order for you to generate the revenue. Another cost today is the depreciation. Obviously, you need to, when you depreciate your assets, you're supposed to put money aside when you need to revamp your infrastructure. So there hasn't been a policy where you get the money, where you calculate depreciation and you put that money aside. Going forward, that's what we are going to do, because we believe that we cannot wait where big government systems are hosted within our area, that the mechanical and the electrical is not upgraded. So we are looking into that matter going forward. The other is the amounts are direct costs. Most of these direct costs, you recover them from customers through tariffs. But if your tariffs are not being adjusted, you are incurring costs that are way higher. The other important thing that the committee should note is that majority of our equipment, for instance, they are imported. So we've negatively, when we come to present the annual report, you'll be able to see, we've been negatively affected by the changes in the rate of exchange. So going forward, that's something that we need to look at. We are going to engage national chair in terms of how do we minimize this risk. This
give us a gross profit or gross margin of around 1.2 billion, which would equate to 19.1%. So even the APP will put a target of 20%, but we need to work very hard to either get more revenue or quality revenue, and then also manage the cost. The operating cost is around 1.1 billion, and that is almost 18% of your revenue. And this is where we're saying that we need to try come up with an operating model that minimizes your operating expense, so that your gross margin can be able to cover your operating expense. So I think the rest of what I need to talk to you is the fact that you've only given us an extra plus of around 97 million. And this has been going down, and I think the reason why we needed to be realistic and put it at a low amount is because we saw what was happening in the current financial year, where the costs were way higher than the revenue that we are receiving. So if we go to the next page, basically it takes the income statement or the statement of financial performance, but then we break it down in terms of the different programs that we have. So you can, the committee can see that majority of revenue that we have comes from our service delivery line, and also a few from infrastructure, meaning hosting services. So, and you can, this is a good thing because it also shows you the margins coming from the different service lines. Okay, the next slide talks about the health of the company, meaning if one day we have to sell it, the person will have to look at the balance sheet. So you need to always make sure that this site is actually healthy. What we have done, and the CEO has already mentioned it, year after year, our trade in other receivables was sitting around a billion range. This year we've made a conscious decision that we are going to reduce debtors by 25%, and that will be in my balance scorecard. What it means is that we have to make sure that the customer complaints about invoicing not being done on time, them not receiving the invoices, those things are dealt with. And invoices are done in a manner that they are not disputed between us and the clients, them ending up not paying us. Because I think CETA, in most instances, we take the credit risk, and that credit risk, we need to manage it. So we are going to come up with ways of managing the credit risk, but also of collecting or improving the collection up to at least 95% of what we have built. Obviously, that will increase your cash flow. This year we're focusing that our cash flow will only sit at around 800 million. But we can't work like that because you need to have enough money to upgrade your hardware and your other core systems. I think that's the main issue that I need to mention in the balance sheet. Okay, the cash flow. If we look at the cash flow from operating activities and we concentrate on 2016-17, you will see it's higher than normal, and the main reason is because of the working capital. The way we've looked at the working capital and the specifically the data, where we are saying we are going to recover more, then which means that there will be more money, you know, generated from operating activities. And then we will put CAPEX together. We are going to invest in CAPEX of around 496 million. And I will talk to that in terms of which programs are we going to spend this money on. It is not ideal. We wanted to spend more on CAPEX, but we were limited by the cash that we have. So if we look at the cash, the capital expenditure, there we've got money that is allocated to program 1, 2, and 6. The other programs, there was no need for infrastructure money to be spent on them, specifically because they are not revenue generating. So service delivery, which gives us the biggest revenue, we are going to spend almost half of the 496. Then we are also going to spend some money on infrastructure, that's modernizing the data centers. But not only that, we are also going to look at making sure that the data centers inside, meaning the mechanical and the electrical, are up to standard, and we maintain that. And then governance, which will be your IT, more things that don't generate revenue, but it's more for cost savings or for us to do things in a better way. So we put some money aside for facilities, and funds aside for integrated security management solution. Internal IT, we need to make sure that the system that we use is upgraded. And also we are going to spend some 1.8 million on production sources. So Chair, that is the finances for future, for 2016. Thank you very much for so quietly allowed for the presentation to go through members in terms of the case, we have been very clear in what we have said and what we are approving. I'm just going to request members that we start, if we refer to a slide, let's refer to a slide and say this is the slide and the page. If your question or comment relates to a document, then let us specify so that when they respond, they are able to respond to the issues that are coming through. So I'm going to meet members for questions, comments. Yes, we have your microphone. I'm going to meet members for questions and comments. Honorable Ngozeni, Honorable Shun, Honorable Kenzi, Honorable Sotensi, and Honorable Masha. In that order, no.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I've got a flu. Sorry for that, Chair. I'm going to ask clarity in your programs. For instance, in your program to infrastructure, electricity supply is still reluctant in the time. This causes a switch efficient risk for data service centers. What interim plans are in place to mitigate this risk? If plans are in place, what is the cost of the plan? Number two, do you have a plan to create opportunity for SMEs, particular those owned by historical disadvantages, individuals, and people with disabilities, which is program trainer? What laws are in place to attract SMEs to conduct business with FRITA? On your financial sustainability, what plans are there to increase on cyber security? So cyber security threats, what are your plans? Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yes, it was indeed a very thorough presentation. Thank you for that, because that's answered most questions I was going to ask. Your explanations. But I was wondering on the cyber security thing, which is obviously a huge issue because you have more data on every citizen in the country than anybody else. And it has been subject to a fair amount of hacking attempts and some of them successful. You don't mention you don't emphasize anywhere an increased spend or a program to address the relevant skills to secure ICT security in government, because you're obviously going to have to recruit people, you're going to have to train people, you're going to have the smartest guys you can find, guys and girls, pardon, the smartest people you can find around the country to actually do this. but there doesn't seem to be any particular emphasis being put on that. I wonder if you could explain some of that. The disaster recovery site, I mean, how many do you have at the moment? I mean, you're talking of two this year, and I think 14 out of the whole MTF time. Does that include the ones that are existing, or do you not have any existing at the moment? Then also there's obviously a very much just an awareness between your grand plan to make CETA that the perfect government go-to place for IT, and your staffing and your money. Are you being too ambitious to be able to get all the sort of groundwork in place with your targets? Because you're going to have to, you know, really, because I think a lot of your gap in that sort of high heels area is probably because a lot of people have got tired of being mismanaged, if I can put it politely, and have gone off to seek cleaner pastures and more, you know, satisfying work environment. Do jobs.
They love you, Marion. You've got an aria in support.
I'm just sort of concerned that will you be able to, at this stage, attract back at some of those skills that you've lost, or to attract new ones? And also, it has a look at the education deficits in science and technology education and graduates. You know, these are the things you're looking for, and they have over the past 130 years been a huge deficit in that kind of skills. If you could please just address this. Thank you.
Thank you, Jettison, and if I just echo Honourable Shin's comments on the policy of the presentation information provided. With government as the single biggest host of personal data on individuals, you've talked of exploiting this data for social and economic purposes. Have you considered the implications of the Protection of Personal Information Act, and have you taken any steps or allocated resources to make sure that you comply with the provisions of this legislation? Then there's been quite a bit of mention, and just some clarity for me, please, on the procurement hub. And it's government's planned centralization of the tender process across all government departments. Is CETA actively developing this? Or what part do you play in this? When do you, you mentioned CETA's on this, which I love the concept of and I like the marketing behind it. Would you say this is the basis for this government centralized tender or procurement system? The role you play in this, when do you think the centralized tender portal is likely to go live? with around 25% of government, around 25% of government procurement is coming through CETA. Obviously, the more procurement that comes through, the better economies of scale you're able to leverage. What is the tipping point, the maximum economy of scale from purchasing power that delivers cost savings to government, maximum cost savings to government more than they can get themselves, and then also generate a healthy revenue surplus for CETA? And if you can give me an idea what percentage of procurement is goods and what percentage is services. Then in terms of rationalization of state-owned companies, we've had the department talk and the minister talk about the rationalization process. In terms of the SA Connect and the National Broadband Network and what seems to be government's idea to create this super network company that will manage this open access network, do you have a role today? Would you see Broadband InfraCo, for example, fitting nicely into CETA? Could you eat up that entity and then run it effectively? I'm just asking. Thank you, Chairperson.
The next one is Honourable Fujitsu.
Thank you, Chairperson. On my state of concerns about gold, we're talking about the provision of high-quality IT service. How would you characterize the quality? How would you measure this quality? What I have to say, it is a high quality,
provision of the high quality of the IT service. And the next one on transmission goal 3. That in almost all departments, there's a problem when it comes to procurement. And when we talk of transformation, I think we talk about the fairness of the process. What do you do actually to ensure that there is this fairness? You know, very often there are complaints about people who awarded tenders when they do not meet the requirements. What is that they're going to do to ensure that there is transformation? And on customer survey, I think in whatever we do, the main target is the public sector we have to satisfy. How often do you do the survey, and what would be the time frame of time of response to the problems apart from the ones that are reaching to investors? And generally, your service that you provide to the public. And we have an annual target of 60%. Is it going to be 60% annually, or maybe something incremental to show the improvement in your service? That if this financial year you are targeting 60%, the next financial year you have maybe 65% or 70% to show that you are responding to this customer survey. On the finances, you talk about the cost of sales. That would be around 7%, and you say it is negotiable. To what extent would you negotiate? That is your bottom line of negotiation, that you ensure that you not negotiate to an extent that you will get a loss. And in the opening remarks, you talk of lack of transformation of SMEs. This is really an unpleasant situation, and not taking in account, taking into consideration, I mean, that the transformation policy has been there for many years, you know, when we're taking a government. And also considering the fact that the SMEs, they have a huge, you know, a significant contribution to the economic growth and also to job creation. So if we still talk about the lack of transformation, it's really not being in kind, and we hope that something will be done to facilitate the process. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, CEO, for the presentation, and also congratulating Gita for well presented. And well documented presentation. Just from the target that you have identified from on slide 3, just want to know if are they achievable, so that you, much as you want to change, or transform, and you adhere to new style, that you don't also bite more than you can chew with those, because then when you come back to us, we'll be hammering you on that. Then on the issue of the disaster recovery, slide 20, I just wanted to know where are they boosted in these hubs. And the other question is similar to what Honorable Simon was asked on the currently, you said you've achieved two, you've established the two sides. And on slide 12 on procurement, the strategic objective 1, I just wanted to find out if you have in line with the requirements of the AG, the verdict, all those officials who are working in procurement, because they can make or break the CETA or any department. Also, I want to find out if you've got plans for the skills transfers in relation to your aging staff complement. Or to ensure that they equip and skill the young staff complement that is in the majority. And whether you are looking, I know that also there's probably you overstaff, you need to actually put the resources in some recruitment areas. But in some plans, when you are more stable, the recruitment of graduates direct from universities, you know, whether being intent and then absorbed. And also the role of business, also in ensuring that they also do the same thing. And it's also complementing, because we all have the same goal. But also they benefit more after when you have become the training and skilling ground and the pouch from there. Lastly, is the issue of the consequence management for non-compliance with the whether be it the balance of card or adherence to policies and change management within the organization, because when things come, the AG makes his funding, everybody blames the CEO and the chair when they are individuals who are supposed to be doing work. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mamba. I think from my side, there's just few. I think the presentation by the CEO really assisted in terms of just raising quite a number of things and responding to quite a number of things. My best one is around your structure. Re-emphasize again our position in terms of your structure, top bloated, which I don't think is still responding to what it in terms of this objective is. I was hoping and holding my thumbs that by this time you will revise the structure. And I'll leave it today. I think I'm hoping still that you find it to go back and relook at the structure in terms of your own mandate and what you need to achieve in the future. Now, come to the performance areas, and I think one needs to applaud, because last time we were very, very unhappy as a community. I remember we had different sitters back and then before we talking of the documents because of the quality of the document and all that. And it's quite refreshing because it assists us too. And I share the sentiments of Honorable Chin. It's very ambitious CEO, and I was going to say good luck to you. Because, and I was sharing with my team that have received the report of the oversight. We did an oversight procedure. And we met the staff. There were quite a number of challenges. Now, from one sitting, there's OG issues. We need to develop the organization. There's moral boosting issues that we must do. So that we have a team that understands this is the direction. These are historical issues because of everything, the lack of motivation. There were even bonus issues at that time where that they promised bonuses, they never received bonuses at that time. So that those were the issues around staff morale that we found. And the reason why I echo the sentiments of NMBS, I think there's a lot that needs to be done in terms of rebuilding future as an institution itself. And being able to do, I mean, at that time we had quite a huge number of people who were telling us that there was no chief, for example, they were not yet placed. In the last plan, we were receiving the numbers that no, we are placing people. Other people have been placed. So there were a lot of things that we had from staff at that time. And that's what we are saying, CEO, where we are sitting, I can only say it's like this. We really need a team that understands where this institution is going. And I hope that work has been done to really take everybody on board and make sure that they understand that this is the future, that everybody has a responsibility to do. Now, coming to the issues around your program, trade procurement, this has been an area where you've been found wanting as future. In terms of most of your audit findings has been around this level. So it's going to be interesting how you tighten up. I know you put it again to monitor. So that going forward, this audit opinions that have been coming off, irregularities, cancellation of vendors, and all those things, do not come in. But Another concern I have is the target that you put in terms of your spending on SMEs, which does not speak to the pronouncement of government. The target of government is 50% of your budget must be of the budget must spend on SMEs. Drive ICT economic transformation agenda, for example, 6% ICT acquisition step through SMEs entities. Sitting at you are targeting 6% again below under 5.3.3, you've got 10%, 15%, almost page 22 of your APT. Now, that for me is because it based what government or the executive pronounces respective positive information based on that. So this is what I find lacking and not in line with what is being said. Now, page 26 of your ATP, building a healthy and high performing organization, percentage of critical positions with minimum cover ratios of 1 to 2. This is on page 26, under 5.5.2. I see that you estimated that 90% of recruitment is at the top talent there, 20% is 15 to 17 there, minimum target, 20% of critical position with minimum cover ratio of 130. This is recruitment. As we see now, how many vacancies do we have at city? We can say before the same kind of critical positions. So that we can know what informs this target of 90% recruitment of talent, top talent performance. And 20% of it. Because if you have the structure full with people, why would you have such a target? Then we come to the issue of performance assessment, and I think the issue for me is around signing performance agreements within the institution. Because this, and this goes to TDG SOC, we're going to request all signed copies of performance agreements of all CEOs. Because the strike plans means, or the APP means nothing if they are not translated into somebody as a commitment. If it's sitting here and CEO Mohapi does not have this thing as part of his performance, then if they are not achieved, nothing happens. So we are now saying all this strategic plans, the issue of non-performance of entities and the department has to be a thing of the past. You see nice strategic plans now, you see nice something that we comfortable with as entities. Now we must see the output of it. Now it must translate to every CEO and agency. The entity must be able to say all staff members must sign the performance agreement. And I remember when we had a discussion, part of the problem at CETA was that people wanted bonuses on us, they didn't have performance agreements. Now how do you offer bonuses and people don't have anything? How do you gauge that they must have a performance bonus? On what basis? Because that was the issue. Now, we want to monitor that within institutions like TDG, Shalem, all the entities. Performance agreements, know with the department as well as for the issue of signing performance agreements. Once the deadline is set by SKCPSA, we will be writing format to the minister to call those performance agreements. So it's going to be quite important for us to see this thing translated. Because it doesn't augur well that we sit and do the PPP said we come and invest at the end. Why is it 5% achievement? Why is it 8%? But if they are nowhere in anyone's performance, if it's not in the CEO, then it's not in the CFO. It might be in somebody in the group. You say this one is a deliverable of this one. And therefore we know that has an internal accountable against that achievement. I think as I said, the issue of finances are a good one. I think we'll give you time to get them sorted. I was trying to see, the item COMCO, what you are spending away. And a sort of voice. Because I wanted to see where you're spending on your external, for example, professional services, consultants, how you doing that, your legal, I suspect of trust them, and they are hiding somewhere. Because once they are trusted, they hide. Because it's interesting in institutions to see how much you spend on legal fees, how much you spend on consultants, because that gives us a sense to managers are there to manage the work or we outsource our responsibilities. And again, the figure in terms of how much you spend on the salary, your HR budget, versus your overall expenditure. Where is it sitting? Is it sitting within an acceptable figure? So when it's not like this, the CFO, when it's not visible like this, we look for it. Because those are the things that must be able to tell us whether we have a healthy organization or not. So that's what we're looking for. I could see your operating costs, but this is kind of on those items that my interest is in. So those are the comments that I have, and I think thanks for clarity on the nature how you revise the strategic plan. It definitely gives us a sense of being able to continue to monitor and evaluate against what you perform. And then, the issue of the board capacity. Governance structures are important. I'm just going to say, I'm not expecting the feedback now to cheap, but I think it's going to be important for the department to ensure that the governance structures of future are not compromised. We must make sure that the board is at full capacity in terms of what it needs to perform. We must not have an option chair, we must have a chair in terms of that. That's why I'm saying I'm making this comment. It's not something that I expect a response now, but I think we need to make sure that in all our entities, we do not compromise the governance structure, so that if the thing goes as a platform where the account is fully, that is functioning optimal. Thank you very much, and we'll give back to the team to respond to the delegation. We'll not prescribe how the responses are coming. A teacher and of the delegation will give to guide the team.
Thank you, Mr. President, no numbers for the questions. The current comment was about the electrical systems and the reliability and unreliability of the electrical systems and what are the plans, and then later on what are the costs of doing so. So the main data center is in Centura. In 2014, the ESCOM lines were very bad there. and the generators was there, some generators up there. It turned out that they, when the Eskom line went down, the generator wouldn't pick up. So, actually during that period, government, home affairs, and from that perspective, you can imagine that the most of government has come to a standstill. There's we have two other centers in and around in Gauteng. One called Numerous, which holds the police systems, SS. Another one, Beta, which holds the, which is almost a disaster recovery, designed to be there. So some of the systems are supposed to be there as disaster recovery SS. Turned out that they were not working at the time. So the building is there, the electricity is there, the disaster recovery system, but the systems inside did not pick up the load. So when we say about disaster recovery, if both everything and the systems inside, that should work when the main site goes down. So I think that's as the general question about which are the disaster recovery sites. We have Central, Beta, Numerous, and then a bigger site in Pietermaritzburg. And essentially we move our sites around. Or our equipment around those sites for disaster recovery. So a certain system may be hosted primarily in Maritzburg, and then it's also located in St. Julian. But I was just going to show later on, maybe just now, what else we have done by saying that we... Maybe let's talk about the mechanical systems. The mechanical systems are now fairly stable. So even if ESCOM goes down, we haven't seen much progress there. But the ones that are still having problems now is the mechanical system, the air conditioning, for example. Air conditioning has to work. If the air conditioning system stops working, we have to shut down the equipment because whatever, if there are problems there, they are not recoverable, unlike electricity. I just have now established a full stabilization plan for the mechanical systems. So that work is going to start in this financial year. And by the middle of the year, when we come back, we'll probably give you more a status of what we've done on the mechanical systems. But if, maybe for the general topic through chair on the disaster recovery, there is still a draft document that still has to, say, be dealt with at the board level. But this gives you a sense of the primary sites. I mentioned Western Cape is also a big site that is replicated or disaster recovered in Brisbane. Free State, small site physically, but has a lot of equipment in it. That is in Mangaung. It has not replicated that one. Then we have Centurion. As I mentioned, it's replicated at Beta. And we've also now taken, this was initially at a time of crisis, where we used a telecom, had to be some Oakham data center for home office. Numerous that SEPs, also disaster recovery at Beta. Limpopo is not a very big site physically, but has an element of host to some of the server equipment there, and it's not replicated. And Maritzburg, it is not replicated. I was just giving an example. It is not replicated. Where there we have using the military port because there's a lot of space there. The same thing. Well, there's a lot of space that has been built and it's quite empty. So we are in more of an emergency using that as a way to replicate management. Now moving forward, maybe just to go here. This is a map of all our, when I said we went into the market to look for facilities that are owned by the private sector. So we have picked up facilities owned by Telkom and including BCX, Vodacom, MTN, and Neotel. Those are the ones that responded. So we have mapped them on a map around the country. Then we've also looked at the venue of our own sites.
We've also looked at what we call switching centers. These are the blue blocks with the cross inside. Switching centers typically just host network equipment. And the reason why we did this thing, we look, for example, Free State came and they said, we're now going to put our equipment in a shed somewhere 20 kilometers out of our home, because we had a crisis now. And they said, please don't. We're going to do it. So that feeling is definitely we're going to do this financially, definitely. With the professional treasury, we're going to do it. We found that the service providers don't have any presence in the Free State. The Free State provincial government wants the disaster recovery site to be in the province itself. So we looked, we have a switching center for network equipment in Balco. And we went there and we found that there's enough space and there's enough power there and the rest of the mechanical systems to, for that switching center to serve as a disaster recovery data center. So that's a little bit of innovation that we're doing sometimes. And the same thing will apply to Northern Cape, where there is not much presence there. And the Northern Cape main site is a little bit of a container here at Kimberley, the main site. So we'll probably use our switching center in RPG to back up the Northern Cape Northern Cape systems. And then the rest of it is really the design and the more technical things. This is the first time we've never had something. Now this gives us a very good principle. We know exactly what to do. All you have to do is just finish up the financial business case. Then we have a tariff, we go to the different provinces and say this is how much it's going to cost. And knowing that it's a required service for them. From a budget point of view, the budget the CFO was talking about, what is the CFO, in the data centers, that 103 million is going to be used for rehabilitation. And you see that the biggest amount over the 3-year period is for the data center, 103 million, 169 and 137. And the rest of it is also now starting to go into modernization. Then on the SMME, there are vast opportunities for SMMEs, particularly for economic development, businesses, women-owned businesses, youth-owned businesses. I think we've always had talents, a target for doing so. And I think she has always been really talking about supporting SMMEs. I remember even 10 years ago when I was in the outside stores talking about it. If when we find that there is no enterprise development system, then you know that the building blocks for participation of MMEs have not been built. And that's what we found last year. And I think it's a very good thing. I think we're sitting here coming and saying that it should never have been. But I see that with so much procurement also, in terms of its advantage, at this point in time, it could not have developed such a program. The fact is not just a social issue, as I said, it's another economic issue. It's a pure competition issue. How companies got to get into CETA is based on their closest to CETA or their closest to the things that constituents of CETA, info plans and so on and so forth. Some of those relationships that remain then still sustain today as one-on-one relationships between the OEM and the service provider. That does not augur well for the principles of the 217 constitutional principles of fair competitiveness, cost effectiveness, equitability, and transparency as an instrument. So that's even another step, something that serves us forward on it. We put a target there on SMME development where we will go on an open, transparent process to attract SMMEs that we will put normal as usual money into them for enterprise development. In the meantime, we tried some other concept before, which was a consortium-based concept. Essentially say that instead of going on into the market
and we would typically the procurement vehicle with a number of companies there and use our request for quotations to go into the market. The attempt that was made about 3 years ago was to go and ask consortiums before and inquire that within the consortium, you then allocate 40% of the work to SMEs. It has sounds like a good concept there, but it has revealed itself to have many structural problems. The first thing is that the unintended consequence of that is that where the market was being, where you had almost 100 people participating in the market, all of a sudden now you have 9 companies participating in the market. And then you have, in those 9, you have one company. That is a strong one, and then they bring the SMEs. So one, maybe two bigger companies, and maybe 7 to 8 SMEs. Then there's a lot of issues there. Potential of funding, potential of anti-competitive behavior, violations of the triple PSA. So we actually went to the Competition Commission and asked for the determination of whether, or even some legal opinion, of whether this thing compares to the triple PSA. It was found that even if we say that you must give 40% of the work to SMEs within a consortium, that is still not compliant with the triple PSA. So, and then we are still being challenged now by people who lost out on this consortium, who are participating in the market. All of a sudden they are not part of the consortium, within the consortium. That means they are out of the market, completely out of the market for the next 3 years. And they are complaining to us. So we said, no, that's not the way to solve the problem. So we're abandoning that consortium approach. I'm trying to use the market. But I think it's a sustainable approach. And that one we hope will be testing with us at Treasury is the one that is used, that where we use the existing citizen. Because even in this list of, if you have a procurement vehicle that has 100 companies registered there, and go on a request for quotation, they will only request quotation on 5 out of the 100. The question is, how do you choose the 5? You have competitiveness on the 5. The system is allowed. But how do you choose the 5? There's a lot of human intervention that sometimes not monitored, sometimes not managed. To the extent that we have a target of a different types of targets, to the extent that you have a system that is tested from the rules are approved by the central, that you don't go to the market on all the 100, you go to 5. The question for us is whether, as you select this 5, a system select the 5, you can then signify such that there is some kind of representation in a competitive environment of designated groups. So you're not saying it's all SMEs in this file, but there's an element of competition and maybe an element of purpose. But we'll test the system with national treasure. I believe that if we pass that, then we have a sustainable system. Alternatively, I mean, you can always use a random number generator. So out of this 100, choose any 5. It will still probably be better than what is happening right now, where the choice is based on human, on a human being, and it is not randomized. And chances are that you find that the five, they are in the 100, you'll find that you have an 80-20 principle called it, and 20% of the people in the 100 are constitute 8% of the 5, of the RFQs, the people who work for the RFQs. We will do that in a sustainable way. So enterprise development, and we'll talk about one thing now that we also could, and a system that allows us to put certain rules around targets. And remember that this system we're going to implement this year, and we're going to also put it to the National Treasury for that special contract. So it's a very, very, very transformational system in a very, very big way. The other thing that we are doing, Honorable Members, is if you go to the CICA website now, you're going to find 2015-2016, we have published the shared demand plan. We didn't say much about it, because we wanted to check its completeness and everything else. But the entire demand plan, that's CIPA, the billions that are there, we are putting them out in the market. Not only that, we say, for transparency point of view, it's not a secret. It should not be kept a secret. Who is doing what work with CETA right now?
under what hands? Is it for how long? If it's an an arrangement that was set in 1990, that continues to this day because there is exclusive relationship between the OEM and the service provider. Let it be known out there in the public domain. So that those stories there that we're talking about, certain types of contingencies, it is not to all people. And believe that is public information. And it's not to all people. What it is to, for people to understand what opportunities exist within CETA, in a true sense. And for them to knock on the doors of the OEMs and say, I want to be a distributor of your systems. And for them to come to us when the OEM says no, say, the OEM says that they don't want to work with us. And for us to go to the OEM and say, it's your prerogative to do so. But remember, we are working on a Section 217 which requires competitiveness, which requires fairness and equitability, among other things. So how are you coming to the party? You don't have a prerogative. And that if this relationship does not promote the five constitutional principles under 217, we have every right to, and we have a duty to deal with that relationship and fix the underlying problems. There are people who want to work with you. You make it possible, it's your business. But we have an obligation ourselves. That's why we want to make it public. Now, when we make it public for Section 70, we are going to announce it now. The chairperson, the person wants to have is promoting an industry day. Not GovTech, for GovTech actually should be about government doing one, public service, not about suppliers. Now we have a session where we deal with suppliers. And this is one of the messages that we'll be distributing out there, saying we are going full scale on transparency. Because sometimes, a lot of times, the person who knows who's doing a good CETA is the only one who knows when the tender is going to come out. Immediately. And remember, 80% of these renewals happen within a month, when supply chain come out. That's a system that is probably one of the biggest impediments for people coming into the system. And then just very quickly then, in terms of revenue, what we are doing when it comes to cybersecurity, we are turning the thing around. And we're saying that is it a good thing that when we send people to government departments, they are seen as salespeople with revenue targets? And we say that that probably does not create the right behavior. Because then the focus is not on solving public sales problems, it's on getting a sales deal so that I get a commission. And that there's a space for that. But our space, we say the people should be driven and we should sell solutions. And when we have a solution, then we know that the government will buy on CETA and CETA will probably survive to be able to sustain its mandate. And it's not about revenue, it's about the solutions. And we've seen, I don't remember, when that language changes, how people change so quickly. And people are willing to give CETA a bit of time. Because they like, I think the money is very, very, very powerful. And they still believe in that. I'm going to give an example of Mr. Ndao in Limpopo. CFO gave kind of talked about it. When we went there to one of the subcommittees on the tariffs, there's one person that we went with who has seen GTOC 4 all these years, last 20 years, says that the warmest GTOC subcommittee meeting he has ever seen. And the reason being that the fact that the rates have not come up on labor means that we are on human resources and recovery. We have a claim to increase them by 40 to 50%. Because that's the backlog. Then when there we understand that they're doing, said, can you please give us 10%? They say, but it's higher than inflation, and they sacrifice. We accept that and we're endorsing. The two committees already have endorsed this kind of position. That's because of the change in language and aligning our interests, our objectives with our objectives as public services. Then on cybersecurity, it's a very, very big topic. There's a whole section and work driven for the department itself. And also from other security services. what we, and they are also under different type of legislative mandates, the funds. So, our approach is essentially to come up in a practical way. The first thing that we're working on is to try and create this role for all government websites. And also, to another infrastructure based solution. So if you can imagine a room here, there is a SIPA system sitting there. There is the government buildings in another area, conceptually. And then there is websites, the public facing part of our government IT. And so we're making a special room for those things. The second one is around standards and architectures. And think about that. There are a couple of things that all CETAs, most CETAs of the world, do for their countries. And one of them, that is common across all the CETAs, is the development of standards. We think CETA legislation and regulation is very small to start. But we have not done that well with respect to ISG security. So that's the thing that we're going to do. And ready to answer the question, Honorable Ambassador, around the skills. We haven't put the emphasis there. But what we've done is a certain critical problems, we are creating them. We see that there's a system that is working there, but we are creating capacity at a program level. So we have executive level program managers for e-government. People who can manage technical people, but also manage a complex multi-stakeholder system. In the plan here, in the structure, on page, on page 12, you see that there were certain projects at the bottom where we're saying e-government, broadband, R&D, DOJ is home affairs, but we're saying that home affairs and SAPS and DOD, we kind of wanted to develop separately. We have since added, as a special project there, under a separate program management, IT security. We are out in the market looking for expertise. Different type of expertise to be able to bolster our program there. So that we have, much as we have people who are doing operational work, we have somebody who's doing something who can help us think in a completely different way. So of course, the challenge is whether people with the reputational deficit that exists right now around CETA, whether we are able to attract the best out there. I think we are still having a challenge. I mean, the CVs that are coming in shows that probably the, even if one thinks about the job ahead and the opportunities ahead, and one looks at the CVs, you realize that the social deficit is still playing a big role. But we have towards the end of refreshing our database of service providers, the so-called headhunters. And so we're going to go in earnest. Out into the market to look for the rest and entice them on the basis of public service too. If you're working in a bank, perhaps you can send a few 3 years or so to come and do your public service in a different way. And we need that kind of caliber of people who know how to operate mission critical systems. So the lack of emphasis is probably not intended. But in the HR and the probably been in the structure. Since then, we've added social security as a sort of problem in the structure. I believe I would have answered a question about the GR, how many of them are there, and so on and so forth. This is a fresh document. So, by the time we come for the annual report, it will be a full-blown. This has gone through the different government committees. But our job now is physical. It's no longer conceptual around this idea. And so, if you are given an opportunity to reduce targets, maybe you should take that opportunity. I knew to say. It is that because sometimes on these things you put certain things in the public domain and then you put certain things organization. It was bigger than this, we've had to cut down.
it is ambitious with a bit of implementation risk on this thing. But really, I mean, if one understands that even the quantitative skills, because we are people to know how to do IT, but general management, using data to manage things, it's not there. And we're still struggling with that a bit. And a lot of it can affect what we are trying to do here. But I mean, the things like critical skills, we, the minute we agree that this was going to happen, then we ask people to go to the system, look at the structure, and redefine what are COX critical and spare skills. They came, we send them back, they came, and now we have some kind of definition. It's going to the HR committee. Along with that, we also said, now, having defined this, let's go to the system and find which are critical skills. Identify the critical skills themselves on the basis of these rules. So there was the system, they brought some things, and then send them back. So now we have a definition of these critical skills. We have identified them. We know the people. This is something that would not have been done typically by before the beginning of the financial year. You have that little bit of preparation. We have done those kind of things. So we know who to work on. Challenge a little bit is now using the performance management system to identify a talent pool and identify a succession pool in a fair, transparent way. That's a little bit of a thing, because the performance management system could have been maybe a bit of an administrative system and not a system that is looking at talent in the traditional sense. Then,
maybe agree with that. I think that's wonderful.
Okay.
I'm going to sell it to the DA internally too.
Oh, no. Indeed. We made a small reference to Poppy in our document. And we are very mindful about that. Because the fundamental problem around the reuse of public data is issues about privacy. We had our last gathering, we had a session, an open session there around this topic. And our attempt was to try and bring the civil society, lawyers, and so on and so forth, to deliberate on the legal and ethical perhaps issues related to opening public data. One, also dealing with economics of public data. Unfortunately, perhaps again because of our reputational deficit, nobody was interested to come through. But we try to do it differently now so that we engage people. Privacy is a very, very big issue for the our shareholder policy. The ownership of all of these things is there. Our job is to generate a public statement and make sure that we flip out the issues for people to address them. In the short term, I think the data is to be used by government for now for policy making, policy optimization. There are certain things. If you look at this carefully, there there's a diagram there on page 9. Very small, but a lot of these things already. Assume that you may check this last and get them, and I hope I don't get quoted. It's positive. This data, when it's protected, is available to individuals in the traditional sense. It can be available on any device. There's no reason why, to the extent that I can go to government and be given my data, and we automate those rules, there's no reason why I should not use an app to do so at any point. There's no reason why all these companies that do verifications of qualifications, that the source is these government systems, that to the extent that they have access to that data in one way or another, that they cannot be automated. That even as an employer, if you come to me with a CV and said, here is my basic education qualifications, even higher education, and you consent that I should go into a government system, right then in front of you, with the system that we have just built now, the employer can type in their ID and out comes information about you with your consent. So I think somewhere between being used in public in government and being used in an IT system, but automated processes that already exist, that to that extent this information can also be used for public benefit.
and for by businesses and so on. And then we'll charge businesses transaction fees for this rate. The procurement hub. The procurement hub is not there. However, the procurement hub that is there will be the IT system. Previously, our interpretation of procurement hub was slightly different to what we're talking about here. So the procurement hub in that sense was more like the office of the chief procurement office. And the feedback that we got last time was that we shouldn't be confusing these things. So an IT system is us. Our role is to build and operate that system directly. And the first users will be, and it will be distributed into government system through the National Treasury. When we go live this financial year, SMS APP, by the end of financial year, it will be used in one way or another by CTESA and one or two transversal contracts we hold by National Treasury. In terms of economies of scale, I don't have a number of what the tipping point. What we know, and that's going to be verified in different ways, is that there is probably a premium of about 30% that we're paying. I mean, without naming an organization, we have demonstrated even recently that if you take a province, all of the province into the mix, it's a very, very big province that we just did, and you can even almost get 5% even more. On that deal, we are now trying to consolidate that those services across the country. So, I think I don't have the numbers now, but the target is to see about a 30% reduction in the cost of IT services. We've done something now with another service provider, where in there we have almost catered for all the government demand for the services, good services that the service provider provides. And you have warranties in our agreement that this is the best price, I think it's the best price here in North Africa, not in government, but in the entire economy in the country, and got the best price in there. And that was using the muscle of economies of scale. Now, on the SA Connect, my chairperson says, the BBI issue, I think we can't answer that.
Can you or won't you?
Surprised to say. Thank you. Surprised to say, I mean, we continue. I mean, our mandate is still to provide the connection to the government, and we can continue to do so and be directed. Yeah. And I mean, I must say that one has just received one more letter from the DG Western Cape provincial government saying what a good job you should be doing. So that is working very well. And tomorrow we are meeting with the DG in Western Cape to look at something similar. But all the time we are working with the department there. The Western Cape, I mean, the focus on schools connectivity as well. What do you mean by palliative? This is a very, very big statement. Because we always say there are standard ways of measuring whether or not IT systems work. And one of them is about availability, for example, the data center. That in a 24-hour period, in a month, in 6 months, in a year, how often was this thing working when I wanted it to work? How often was the network working? But also, what I said to our staff members is like to go beyond that, talk exactly to our promise to members of the public. And we go back to our mandate. Our mandate says it is divided to the public. And then it says to the IT, maintenance of IT systems, delivered to government department. Our mandate actually forces us to think about members of the public, first and foremost. So when an IT system is working and is of high quality, it is the one that is delivering services as expected by members of the public, promised through the normal government systems, through the NHSF and the rest of the other police documents. So it's not good enough
that a data center availability has moved from 78% to 99%. Is that it means that the lines at home affairs are shorter, and to that what extent do they get shorter? It's not good enough that SoftBank, for example, is operating at a higher level of availability. When I punch an ID here, it will just be a number. It is whether or not in winter particularly, people no longer have to start queuing at 4 a.m. That's a measure of our performance in relation to our public service mandate. But we need to translate that measure all the way into the measure of IT systems. And that's a new thing that we are doing within TRIT, linking the interests of the public members to how we measure IT systems. And we cannot also forget about the standard measurements of our IT systems. So even it comes all the way into procurement, the way we measure whether or not we had a good deal, it's not necessarily about the discount that we got to say. It's about whether other cities around the world are paying for the same thing, pound for pound, based on a standard metric. And then, I think maybe just to jump there to the other question about the customer survey. I don't think we have done a customer survey from members of the public. But it's something that we are going to do, maybe not this financial year, but the year after. There's a program that we introduced last year called Day in the Life of a Customer that attempted, the intention was, very, very good intentions was to place SITA employees in the whole face of public service. So Day in the Life of a Customer is a day in the life of an officer, of correctional services officer, or the police service. It tried to be a different type of day in the life. Now what we're introducing is setting, what is setting. Go into an education environment, into a Tibet college, and understand what the challenge of the Tibet college is, so that when you come up with a solution, you come up with a solution that links to the direct interface, the coverage of public service. You understand exactly what people are, the learners there are saying. And if you can get an e-learning platform, you know what public service problem it is solving. It is not a typical problem similar to a system that is used by a bank or an insurance company. So we're changing that data of a customer, deploying ourselves. At least once a year, most of the system managers, if not all, should go somewhere. Go to the social, to the that line where people start queuing at 4 a.m. and meet to the grounds, and come up to us with a solution. And then when we go and do a survey to members of the public, then we can ask them properly, has public service improved? They don't know what SITA is. So we do it in the context of what the shareholder program is, as a measure of our performance. I think there was a question on slide 8 as well. I think about the fairness. On improving transformation. We have also acknowledged our current, where we are right now, and the tools that we are trying to develop. In addition to just going out and publishing a demand plan, I think it's the intention is also to have also sessions with people who have not been aware, they're trying to knock on SITA's door. As part of the industry, a session for SMEs, so they understand, before tenders go out, what are the opportunities are. Then the other issue I think about fairness is the cleanliness of our procurement system. There are sometimes people who are not qualified then being appointed. I think, in my time there is a lot of rigor, particularly when things go through the procurement committee on those things. And every decision is a well-considered decision. To the extent that the tender says you are disqualified, it may not be the right reason. And I think we understand that these are some of the fortune then we are taking out such sometimes frivolous requirements. If the tender says you get disqualified if you don't have X, Y, and Z, we disqualify. However, we also review to say, is it okay to say that you should be disqualified if we want to know that you have presence in free state, deliver service that we require there. And is it fair to say that we want to have a lease? Is it the right thing to say we want to have a valid lease agreement in order to prove that you can be, you can even, can deliver there? It's probably not the right thing. And someone who does not have a lease agreement is not signed by two people there, but then it gets disqualified because of an unclean thing. It doesn't augur well because it doesn't seem like, from a fairness point of view, it doesn't seem like we are looking for technical skills to do the work. It seems like we are looking for other things to disqualify people. To disqualify people. And that feedback comes to us. The other kind of feedback that comes to us is when we have this list of this procurement vehicles that have 100 people. Who comes to our lesson of me and say, no, the rail, you put us into the system because we qualify to provide the goods and services. But when the goods are, when everything is required is 10 rand, we are one of the five. When it's 100 rand, then we are excluded, and there is a pattern there. And that pattern is not based on our capabilities because we qualify as much as other people. You never told us that we don't qualify for the 100 rand items. So, those issues of fairness, almost every time we go into a procurement session and we deal with matters, there's always improvement. Let us improve there. That's improvement. That looks like a frivolous requirement. Is there any other way to be able to deal with that and create an impression? So transparency in terms of information, building up the standard documents, and then using the system to take out human intervention. Okay, and 90% does not say the same. It does increase over a period. And it's in the strategic plan. On the page 64 of the strategic plan, it's 50% and then 70% and then 80%. So we're trying to improve it also. We'll do them, the one about cost of sale. I think we have dealt with and accept the effect that transformation is not, we're not where we should have been. And then the target, I think we also acknowledge that. I think I also have bought on the 25. But we will put all our efforts into that. To do that. And then DR, I think we've also done that with some of these things. And then looking at the procurement people, I have also submitted that document. And then plan for skills transfers. The skills of young people is an issue. We found that our internship program was also not, it was being done, but not to the heart. And not to try to bring capabilities. And we're not going to do any issues around intensive, but they are some of the areas that we are revamping. And it is okay. The best thing that we can do for people is to get them into a work environment so that they have practical skills in their CV. We have looked, for example, in Germany and in Denmark. When we talk about our youth employment going towards 50% now. In general, youth employment is about less than 10%, and Denmark is zero. But the reverse is that in company vocational training is almost 50% for the 15-24-year-olds. And there is a clear correlation in the reverse regarding youth unemployment and in-company vocational training. The skills that we develop there for internship are not skills that we may absorb all of them, but as you mentioned, all of my circle that we can deploy, Muslims can go into the industry and benefit. I think for Priscilla, even in the long term, is that CETA is a foundation. The things that have been always said in here, whether it's procurement, you come in, you learn how to do things, you can participate in the economy through being a supplier of the future, or through being another type of entrepreneur and using CETA systems to develop your own things into the future. So, I think conceptualizing the internship program in that sense, it's now a new thing that you're putting, and we'll change accordingly. Yes, yes. Yes, I mean, one of the things we some of the members of the board, we management went to a study tour to South Korea. A couple of things let us learn. The first one is their development of e-government. They eventually developed a complicated architecture, but it took 3 years and many PhDs and many people from Samsung, from LG, from Korea Telecom to do that. So I think that's one of the things that helped us say this is not a good direction for us. Let's take our time. The second thing that we're sending about four or five people, say, for example, to South Korea, to that institute that developed that e-government. And they're going there to train, and they're going to be tested. So when they come back, we're looking for certificates. So it's not just a training program. That's the I think the lesson learned is that such programs, you need to work with the private sector, clearly. They have a trust relationship with the private sector, clearly. You need to make the best use of the private sector. You need to understand the capabilities that you have within the state structure. And skill deserving should not shy away from training people. The people that we met in there, they were masters and PhDs and everything else to do that kind of to get Korea to be number one in the e-government. I'm not sure those, we've got another example there, that the total national change mindset around e-government was caused by a young lady who took some public data around the public transportation system and created an app, and she was sued by the Seoul municipality, I think, for illegal access to public data, illegal use of public data. And there was an outcry. And from then on, they changed the whole approach and said, this is for the people. The government must set up a platform for entrepreneurs to use, subject to all the rules around privacy and so on. Then I think the last one, chairperson was asked, I mean, I think the rest are statements of acknowledgement. We acknowledge those. It's a matter. Oh no. Oh, it's consequence management. Yes. It came through, this is something I think members of my board are looking at, they said we told him it's gonna arrive. It's a very hot topic, driven at the board level, almost every committee on the board. That is one thing to map a reason to ask people to change, to pray for them to change, beg them to change, but it's time now to say that this is public sense. This is public money. The money that we use, that income, 99% of citizens' income comes from the tax base. Everybody pays tax. Every cent that we use here, a lot of it comes from that everybody's paying. That much as we have an obligation to bring people along, time to act. That's all I can say. I think the board members here have clearly and made very clear what they said to me on this.
Yeah. Well said.
Chair, the structure leave for later. The issue on the KPIs, I think we acknowledge that. The audit and procurement, we opening run of effort on that. You know, the EXCO, we used to have one EXCO. We now have 2-day EXCOs. And the reason was a bit of a wake-up call for me at one audit and risk committee by the acting chairperson of the chairman. And the internal audit said, we are regressing. So, and I realized that, in fact, you know, that single EXCO doesn't really give us enough time to do things. So we spend quite a lot of time now on that layer of things that comes from internal audit. And in order for us to prevent things from even bubbling up to the board and becoming board-level issues. The way we are approaching the internal audit report is not only just to look at findings, because the finding represents sampling. It's also looking at the root cause and finding the general problem and looking at solving the general problem. So when you say that there's a finding on the auditors found one evergreen content, it's not enough to say that this now has been revised. It's going into the entire database of contracts and find evergreen contracts that are evergreen because of the way the contract has been done. Those are evergreen because of the way the contract has been managed through renewals automatically. And these renewals that happen because tenants have cancelled and so on and so forth. This is being we're paying attention to that. On the issue about, on SMEs, we do acknowledge. We put 50% in the last year of this MTF, and that's probably the target, government target is now. It's not 6 years, 2 years, 3 years from now. And I think the schemes that we talked about today, asset possible for normally in us over achieving that. In terms of recruitment cover ratio, this particular KPI is a typical target that where we changed how we the target for the year, but we kept the overall still the same. So the 9% recruitment as per the top talent plan, we had a target for this financial 50-50. So we had, at the beginning of the year, we had 1,000 vacancies. For the financial issues, we cut them down to 400, so just below 500. But furthermore, we cut them down because we the labor costs, to be told, are probably too high. Because we don't ask ourselves whether or not we've done enough on productivity. Is our problem having, is it about the number of people there, or is it about what we get out of existing people? And why do we get out of existing people? Is it because of them, or is it the kind of training programs that we give to them and opportunities for people to grow? And we chose the latter as a problem segment. It's not about the numbers of people. It is about what the quality. And it's not about people coming and managing their own careers. It's about the organization assisting people to manage their careers, where we are able to meet the need of the organization and aspirations of our employees. So we are showing the focus in the moving forward. The focus is not about recruitment. The focus is now about internal succession planning. That's the difference between 15-16 target and the other two targets. And the performance contracts, most definitely, Chairperson, my performance contract this year is the APP, as it is. So the case there is no substance. And just so that you probably be able to answer the two questions, Chairperson, we do have, it's just the detail that you asked for. It is not in here, I think, yes, next time we will at least itemize, provided some others are saying two lines of cost of sin and operating expenses. But we do have the detail, and we can always respond on what is the distribution cost, how much does how much do different things cost? Labor, consultants, and so on and so forth. Legal. Not sure whether that's you want the details. I'll just look at the board there. Labor. Okay. So it's so labor with I'll just write it down. All costs. Thank you. to about 5% off. About 5% off. Particularly for the outputs, extra second efficient revenue. Because another measure is what this is as a percentage of income. And it's also 30%. That's the numbers. Labor is a cost, at a total cost of operations. Probably not, because we are, it's still a labor intensive business. It's a service business. But it's only 5% is what's off. It's only 5% is what's off. Because I mean, I think when I remember in telecom companies, if I remember the making it about 20 or slightly less. But remember they are quite infrastructure based organizations. The biggest force will be the field forces, field employees. But in the situation that we have networks, we have desktop support. That's the one that takes most of the labor. Most of them. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Chair, just honourable member, I just wanted to add that we share the common concerns and props. We will be back in terms of a top-heavy structure. And I share that particular sentiment with you because a top-heavy structure is not responsive, especially for service organisation that we are. So it is something that would test.
Any follow-up members from the discussion? Now, McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. I asked, and I'm not sure you gave me an answer, maybe I missed it, what percentage of procurement to the best of your ability is goods and what percentage of services? And then on slide 19, sub-program 13 on networks, there's a 1.07 billion expenditure. Does that include broadband networks, fiber in the ground, that sort of thing? Thank you very much.
As I said, one broadband, not infraco.
Yeah, it's not really follow up to my questions, but I comment that, you know, we are speaking with the with people who are keeping in as far as social security is concerned, people benefit from everything that is there, you know, providing us with wrong information. And from the intention of the teacher, I think that is the key. So.
Yes, let's start with the last one on page 19. Talk about that 107 million.
Yeah.
Yes, that is for the current network, including the broadband networks or provincial broadband networks where we've been asked to do the work.
Okay.
So even in this country, we were still not done with the Western Cape provincial network. So part of it is the further investments.
Is that an open access network?
It's a government network.
Okay.
Yeah. This one, it's how it is used by the province is a decision of the province. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah. In West Cape. Okay. But for most of what the other ways when we do this is the core network is government only in there.
Thank you.
Then I'm not sure if we can split the services now. Perhaps I could just ask you
that we
give it to you later.
Thank you very much. I think it helped up front to really be in detail because it literally gained a lot of our patience and issues that we have. And from our side, thank you very much, Dr. For the preparations and the work, there can be some signs that shows that we're moving towards the right direction in the future. We need to have in terms of our oversight on accountability and the performance, what is it called, performance achievement or when you report that in terms of your annual performance. Thank you very much for the submission and we look forward to further engagements. and hopefully that you'll be able to get this information right. I think that is my best. I made a mistake here not to reach out the apologies. I think I dealt with the issues. We did receive an apology from the minister, the deputy minister, and two members, Honorable Julian and Honorable Jokabashu, and for this mission, so that we can record it in the minute. Thank you very much for everything. Honorable
I should just say to put on record that standard apologies are being noted.
Okay, thank you very much for the meeting with our general members.
Good luck with your presentation.